Chapter 12. It was the fifth day. After a breakfast of small, rather sour local berries, a sliver of hare flesh, or at least it had come from a beast that had looked like a hare, and a strip of what was left of his jerky, Joshua made his rounds. He walked around his traps, checking out the snares he'd set, mostly at the fringes of the forest clumps. He was ever watchful in this deceptively quiet world, and kept his weapons to hand, but he was getting used to the routine now. He was also, unfortunately, getting used to going hungry, and it looked like that streak of bad luck might be continuing. His traps were empty, 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 just like before. Maybe he'd have to think about going deeper into the forest clumps. He knew there was game in there, at least up in the canopy. He had managed to snare an unlucky hare at a forest edge. Well, it was unlucky, because it looked like it had already been injured when it fell into his trap. The animal was very hare-like, but it had loose flaps of skin trailing between its wings, like a flying squirrel, perhaps adapted to life in the treetops. And maybe it had suffered an attack by some other aerial creature, for its left wing was gashed, and most of one cheek torn away, exposing small teeth in a bloody mouth. It was still alive when he'd found it, and he'd apologized more profoundly than usual as he ended its small life with as much kindness as he could. He'd left the hare a while to cool and for the fleas to clear. Then he'd taken it home, skinned it, and flame-roasted it with local berries and some wild garlic. The meat had been tender and delicious, but there just wasn't much of it. That had been his sole catch so far, which was why he remembered it in such detail. There seemed to be nothing like regular rabbits or hares running around on the ground of this world, nothing for his snares to trap. Maybe the ground-level predators were just too ferocious here, that, and maybe the grass was too sparse. As he came to his fifth empty snare, a shadow passed over him. He ducked instinctively into the shade of the trees. Nothing good was going to be moving soundlessly through the sky above. Peering up warily, he saw a vast form sailing above the forest canopy. At first, he thought it was some kind of glider. That wingspan had to be 50 feet. But he soon realized it was too organic a structure for that, the curves of the wings too graceful, the bones clearly visible through flesh stretched so tight it was all but translucent. He saw feet on skinny legs, armed with vicious-looking claws, and a beak that must have been as long as he was tall, filled with glinting teeth. No feathers on the wings, but there were splashes of colour on that spindly central body. Some kind of pterosaur, perhaps, the biggest of its kind he'd ever seen, and a tough-looking carnivore, even if those wings looked fragile. No wonder there were no birds here. They'd have been easily outcompeted by such creatures, the honed products of millions of years of evolution of their own. And maybe that was another reason why there were so few, if any, small rabbit-like ground-dwelling mammals. Too easy a target for the killers in the sky. He remembered Bill Chambers urging him to spread something bright, like his spacesuit silver emergency blanket, on the top of his bluff, in case some disaster befell him and the twains came searching. Now he was glad he'd instinctively rejected that advice and wasn't drawing the attention of the monsters in the sky. The pterosaur sailed away off to the west, and Joshua warily watched it go. Whatever was on its menu today didn't include him, at least. And when he looked down to the ground once more, he saw the troll. The humanoid was a big, older male, a mass of black fur, but with a speckling of grey around his face and on his back, the kind some people called, inaccurately, a silverback. He was squatting, staring at a bare patch of ground before him. The troll was alone. His troop was nowhere to be seen, but Joshua knew they would be around somewhere. Joshua sighed and strode forward, emerging from the shadows of the forest clump. There were plenty of times he'd been glad to see a troll, but this wasn't one of them. "Well, there goes the neighbourhood." The troll glowered at him. He lifted a hand like a steam hammer and touched one finger to his lips. "Shut up." The gesture was unmistakable, and one of the elements of an informal sign language that had evolved across the long earth, leaking out from labs and farms and factories and other places where trolls lived and worked alongside people, sometimes even by choice. Joshua stood still and shut his mouth. He had learned not to argue with trolls. The troll went back to his earnest inspection of the ground. An unmeasured time passed. The troll stayed utterly still, apparently relaxed. That was harder for Joshua to manage, as the sun climbed higher in the sky and he grew thirsty and his stomach rumbled. He still saw no sign of this troll's troop, nor heard their calls. It wasn't unknown for trolls to be encountered alone. This one could be a scout, sent out from the pack stepwise to seek out food or water, or spot potential threats. But Joshua didn't think so. Scouts were usually a lot younger, their senses still sharp, fleet of foot. Maybe this older male, approaching the end of his life, just wanted some time to himself. He was on a troll sabbatical, just like Joshua's. Even after all these years and for all the intensive study of their collective behaviour pioneered by the likes of Lobsang, people knew hardly anything about trolls, and certainly not in the wild. If he'd thought to bring a troll call, Joshua supposed, he could have asked. Joshua was getting bored and a little dizzy. Enough of this. He opened his mouth to speak. Slam! The troll brought his two great fists down on the ground with a smash, and Joshua was amazed to see the ground crumble under the impact, a thin crust cracking to reveal some kind of earth-walled chamber down there, a couple of feet deep, with rough tunnels leading off into the dark. And animals. They swarmed over each other. Things like furless rabbits or rats, pale beasts with claws and teeth shaped for digging, tiny pink eyes clamped shut against the light. Immediately, the creatures began to escape from the central nest, wriggling, scrambling back down the tunnels. Their movements were liquid. They seemed to flow away from the intrusion of daylight. With a roar, the troll jumped down into the hole, his big feet crushing a couple of the animals, and he started grabbing the creatures one at a time in each big fist, shaking them until they went limp, throwing them aside, bending down for more. He glanced up at Joshua, and the invitation on his crumpled, gorilla-like face was unmistakable. Joshua dropped his bits of gear and jumped down into the hole, opposite the troll. He tried to emulate the troll's industry, but he needed two hands to get hold of a single rabbit, and when he managed to catch one creature, it turned out to be bigger and stronger than it looked, and dug needle-like teeth into the webbing of his thumb until he dropped it. Damn it! He bent down and tried again, this time favoring his prosthetic hand. Bite on this! This time he got a rabbit from the hind end, so he kept those teeth away. With a muttered apology, trying to avoid the spiteful claws on its kicking back feet, he slammed its head against the ground, feeling its neck crack. Ha! Then he tossed the quivering corpse aside and looked around for more. But all the surviving rabbits had gone, squirming away into their tunnels. Joshua had that one miserable catch at his side. The troll had two heaps of, count them, 10, 15, maybe 20 each. The big old troll looked at Joshua's single specimen, and his own piled-up catch, and back again.
Ooh!
Joshua had heard a troll laugh before. It was a sound you never got used to. Soon he was joining in, laughing until his gut ached. Then the troll threw over one more rabbit carcass to Joshua, gathered up his haul in his huge arms with effortless ease, laughed once more,
ooh,
and stepped away. That evening, before the sun went down, Joshua gutted and cleaned both rabbit moles and cooked them on spits over his fire. He could barely wait until he could get his teeth into the smooth, lush meat. But after 5 days hungry, he knew not to overeat. He determined to put the produce of the second rabbit aside for salting and curing in the sun. Of course, these little mammals with their big rodent-like incisors and digging claws weren't rabbits, or rats, or moles, all of which they resembled to some degree. Maybe they were like the mole rats he'd heard of in Africa, living underground in big warrens, clambering over each other in the dark. Mole rats lived in societies like hives, like social insects, with just a few breeding pairs supported by a mass of sterile siblings, nephews and nieces. Maybe it was that way here.
And maybe that's where all the local rabbits and hares went, he said to the air. Underground, we are safe from the death gators and super pterosaurs and whatever else the elephants here are armored against. Not safe from a clever enough troll, though. Or from Joshua, the mighty hunter. Ha!
And just as he said this, he became aware of the troll watching him. The big silverback male was back. He was sitting just beyond the glow cast by Joshua's fire. Even by the uncertain light of the evening, Joshua could see blood smeared around the big humanoid's mouth. Surely he had been drawn here by the scent of the cooking. Trolls loved cooked meat, and would use fires when they came across one, such as after a lightning strike, but had never mastered the art of making fire.
There never was a King Louis of the Trolls, buddy.
Who?
Never mind.
With a pang of regret, Joshua picked up the rabbit he'd half-eaten, and the other, cooked but still whole, and carried them both out to the troll. He sat in the dirt before the troll, and laid the intact carcass before him like a respectful waiter.
Your rat, sir. Well done, as you ordered.
Ooh!
The troll tore into the meat. Joshua sat down and ate with the troll, if more slowly, and considered his distant relative. From step day, the archaeologists, including a young Nelson Azakiwe, had tried to understand the absence of mankind in the new worlds. They had found flint tools in the dusty footprints of Olduvai. They had found fossil hearths in the depths of caves in stepwise Europes. But a certain spark had never been lit behind heavy brows on any world save Datum Earth. Perhaps, the comedian said, on every other world the black monolith just mislaid the man-ape's address. But what you did get out in those human-free worlds were other kinds of humanoids, evolved from the same basic rootstock as mankind, presumably. They were all thought to be descendants of Homo habilis, handy man, 2 million years extinct, but with wildly different natures, some more pleasant to encounter than others, and some had evolved to take full advantage of the extended landscape of the long Earth, of which cousins of mankind, the trolls were the epitome. Joshua said now,
Look at us, buddy. Two old bookends in the wilderness. Here was me thinking I was Crusoe, and all of a sudden you show up. I can't call you Friday. Sancho, how about that?
Huh?
Help me, Sister Georgina. We did get through that book together in the original Spanish just once. La mejor salsa del mundo es el hambre.
Huh?
Eat well, my friend.
The wind picked up, and sparks from the fire rose up into the tall dark of the empty sky.